Just before we read the passage, I don't know how many people know or always hear or not, but at the moment we're going through a series looking at David in the Old Testament and looking at him as a man after God's own heart. So it's Old Testament, which can sometimes be harder and less obvious to relate to, but God really clearly speaks through this passage. And where we're up to is we're going to today look at Jonathan and David and their friendship. And at this point, we know that God has chosen David to be the next king. And we also know that Saul, who is the king, is really angry, doesn't like David, is jealous, and wants him dead, has already tried to kill him once. And Jonathan and David have been friends for a long time because David used to come and play the harp to help Saul when he was in sort of evil fits of rage. This harp would help him just calm down. And David went and fought where no one else would against Goliath. And Jonathan and David both have a real genuine heart for God, and they're young guys who grew up and have become like brothers, and they're really, really close. And so this is it's quite a long passage, but it's a passage that we can look at and look at their friendship. And I just love you to think, when we're looking at it, maybe think of two people in your life who you're really close to. So might be a husband or your wife or your parents or someone you've prayed with through your whole life, someone who's a really close friend, just two different people. And imagine what it would be like if those two people, one of them hated and was actually even trying to kill the other one. Imagine what that's like for you to live with that tension. And that's the tension that Jonathan was living with. So he had his father, who's Saul, who's the king, hates and wants to kill his closest friend, who is like a brother to him. And that's a hard place to be stuck in, and loving God. So you've got your father who's the king, chosen by God first. You've got your best friend like a brother who is now chosen by God because Saul had turned his back on God. And you love them both. And this one wants to kill this one. Like, who do you help? Who do you talk to? How do you respond to that? And this story is about how that sort of comes about, what he does. So Peter and Paul are going to come up and we're going to read it, and they're going to do the voices of Jonathan and of David just to help us, because it's quite a long story, sort of being too, and I'm going to narrate probably not very well. Okay, do you need microphones? No.
Not really.
Okay. So then David fled from Naoth at Ramah and went to Jonathan and asked,
"What have I done? What is my crime? How have I wronged your father that he's trying to take my life?"
"Never,"
Jonathan replied.
"You are not going to die. Look, my father doesn't do anything, great or small, without letting me know. Why should he hide this from me? It isn't so."
But David took an oath and said,
"Your father knows very well that I found favour in your eyes. And he said to himself, 'Jonathan must not know this or he'll be grieved.' Yet surely as the Lord lives, and as you live, there is only a step between me and death."
And Jonathan said to David,
"Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it."
So David said,
"Look, tomorrow's a new moon feast, and I'm supposed to dine with the king. But let me go and hide in the field until the evening of the day after tomorrow. If your father misses me at all, tell him, 'David Lee earnestly asked my permission to hurry to Bethlehem, his hometown, because an annual sacrifice is being made there for his whole clan.' If he says, 'Very well,' then your servant is safe. But if he loses his temper, you can be sure that he's determined to harm me. As for you, show kindness to your servant, for you have brought him into a covenant with you before the Lord. If I'm guilty, then kill me yourself. Why hand me over to your father?"
"Never,"
Jonathan said.
"If I had the least inkling that my father was determined to harm you, wouldn't I tell you?"
David asked,
"Who will tell me if your father answers you harshly?"
"Come,"
Jonathan said,
"let's go out into the field."
Then Jonathan said to David,
"I swear by the Lord, the God of Israel, that I will surely sound out my father by this time the day after tomorrow. If he's favorably disposed towards you, will I not send you word and let you know? But if my father intends to harm you, may the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if I do not let you know and send you away in peace. May the Lord be with you as he has been with me, as he has been with my father." But show me unfailing kindness, like the Lord's kindness, as long as I live, so that I may not be killed. And do not ever cut off your kindness from my family, not even when the Lord has cut off every one of David's enemies from the face of the earth.
So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying,
May the Lord call David's enemies to account.
And Jonathan then made David reaffirm his oath out of love for him, because he loved him as he loved himself. Then Jonathan said to David,
Tomorrow is a new moon feast. You will be missed because your seat will be empty. The day after tomorrow, towards evening, go to the place where you hid when the trouble began and wait by the stone Ezel. I will shoot 3 arrows to the side of it, as though I were shooting at a target. Then I'll send my boy and say, Go, find the arrows. If I say to him, Look, the arrows are on this side of you, bring them here, then come, because as surely as the Lord lives, you're safe, there's no danger. But if I say to the boy, Look, the arrows are beyond you, then you must go, because the Lord has sent you away. And about the matter you and I discussed, remember, the Lord is witness between you and me forever.
So David hid in the field, and when the new moon feast came, the king sat down to eat. He sat in his customary place by the wall opposite Jonathan, and Abner sat next to Saul, but David's place was empty. Saul said nothing that day, for he thought, Something must have happened to David to make him ceremonially unclean. Surely he is unclean. But the next day, the second day of the month, David's place was empty again. Then Saul said to his son Jonathan, Why hasn't the son of Jesse come to the meal, either yesterday or today? And Jonathan answered,
David earnestly asked me for permission to go to Bethlehem. He said, Let me go, because our family is observing a sacrifice in the town, and my brother has ordered me to go be there. If I found favor in your eyes, let me go to see my brothers. That's why he has not come to the king's table.
Saul's anger flared up at Jonathan, and he said to him, You son of a perverse and rebellious woman, don't I know that you have sided with the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of the mother who bore you? As long as the son of Jesse lives on this earth, neither you nor the kingdom will be established. Now send someone to bring him to me, for he must die.
Why should he be put to death? What has he done?
Jonathan asked his father. But Saul hurled his spear to kill him. Then Jonathan knew that his father intended to kill David. Jonathan got up from the table in fierce anger. On that second day of the feast, he did not eat, because he was grieved at his father's shameful treatment of David. And in the morning, Jonathan went out to the field for his meeting with David. He had a small boy with him, and he said to the boy,
Run and find the arrows I shoot.
And as the boy ran, he shot an arrow beyond him. When the boy came to the place where Jonathan's arrow had fallen, Jonathan called out after him,
Isn't the arrow beyond you?
And then he shouted,
Hurry, go quickly, don't stop.
And the boy picked up the arrow and returned to his master. The boy knew nothing about all of this. Only Jonathan and David knew. Then Jonathan gave his weapons to the boy and said,
Go, carry them back to town.
And after the boy had gone, David got up from the south side of the stone and bowed before Jonathan 3 times with his face to the ground. Then they kissed each other and wept together, but David wept the most. And Jonathan said to David,
Go in peace, for we have sworn friendship with each other in the name of the Lord, saying, The Lord is witness between you and me, and between your descendants and my descendants forever.
And then David left, and Jonathan went back to the town. Thank you. So the two people, I want you actually to think of two people, the two people that you thought of, imagine if they were open and vocal about one of them hating the other. And what is worse, that hatred is actually, it's not even based on fact. It's based on fear and jealousy and pride. And then Saul used these things to serve. He served out of his fears. He wasn't serving God anymore. God didn't trust. He didn't have his spirit over Saul anymore. But he was ruling. So I found this really interesting, because I got kind of muddled between how can he be king and yet he's king, and Actually, Saul was ruling the armies at the time, and people came under him. So when they went into battle against their enemies, the Philistines, even David wanted to be in that battle under Saul. Even though he knew he'd been chosen by God, he wanted to come, you know, he wasn't rebellious. He wasn't trying to, like, big himself up as the king. He was a servant. He wanted just to be in God's plan, doing what God had for him. And Saul, out of jealousy and fear, out of comparing himself, because the crowds loved David, and they would shout and rejoice and say how many people he had killed, Saul just couldn't deal with this. It just struck his whole identity of who he'd now become as this sort of mighty king. But Jonathan was also close enough to his father to know the hardships, know the real torment. And it wasn't just a straight out thing that Saul wanted just to kill David. It kind of came and went. He had times when he wanted to kill him, and then times when, like, he went and prophesied with Samuel, and actually then he wanted David to live. And it was really up and down. And Jonathan was close enough to his father to see the reality of this, to see that his father was a person. You couldn't just say Saul was king who hated David. He was a complex person as well, and he didn't often know what he wanted. And he compared himself, and he felt less. But Jonathan always hoped, I think, that his father would recognize David actually as a servant and as chosen by God for his heart. And even though he knew, because Saul had tried to kill David, I think it seems that Jonathan didn't want to totally believe that's all his father was. So when we heard in that story he went back and they arranged that arrangement to see if Saul did want to kill him, it's as if Jonathan wanted to give his father another chance. Did he really want to kill David? And like Jonathan with his father, sometimes I think, you know, we really see the people that are really closest to us, we see them as a complex whole person as well. And we see that actually no one's perfect at all. And even our parents as well. You know, God asks us, it's a commandment that we honor our parents. And Jonathan, he knew the commandments well. He knew that God was asking him to honor his father. And yet his father was tormented by evil spirits. He didn't trust God. He had serious control issues. He was trying to kill an innocent man, his son's best friend. So how does Jonathan honor his father? You know, imagine having a father like that. Should he just say, it's fine, you're my father, you can do anything, it's fine, it's all right, and pretend? Or should he realize that there are actually consequences to Saul's actions? And I found it really interesting thinking, actually, this is really helpful to know how we hold the commandments and how we hold something quite complicated like honoring our father and our mother from Jonathan. Because Jonathan actually saw the bigger picture, and he loved God, and he accepted that his father Saul wasn't perfect, and yet he knew God's ways were right. So rather than just walk away and hate his father, he chose to honor him, but he chose to do it in the way that he looked at God and what God was asking of him. He knew that his father, like every one of us, is made in the image of God. So there's something of God in his father. And there's also that part in his father made in the image of God would have wanted his son to follow God, but he just wasn't engaging with it. That wasn't where he was tormented by evil spirits. And so what Jonathan did was to honor this friendship because he had a covenant with David, and he knew that David was chosen by God. So he chose to honor what God wanted. And that's how he honored his father. It wasn't just by saying, yes, it's okay, I'll do bad things because my dad told me to. He chose to honor his father by honoring God first. And he also chose to do it by facing the truth, facing that his father did want to kill his best friend, and helping his best friend escape. And his father was furious. He knew what happened. And because he tested his father's reactions, and remember when we just read, and when Saul got so angry and he realized what had happened, he realized that they'd made a plan and that David had escaped. And his fury and anger spilled over into violence, and he hurled a spear at his own son, who he loved. He didn't want to kill his son. But that anger inside him was so deep that it turned into violence. His identity was so shaken up that he did something he didn't mean to do. He struck out in anger and in violence. And then Jonathan really saw what his father was capable of and knew that this violence was real and that he was going after David and that he had to warn his friend. And he disobeyed his father and went and helped his friend escape. And we often think to honor our parent is just to obey, but I think this challenges that and shows us actually we're in all circumstances to put God first. And this story helps us to see that God wants us also to use common sense and wisdom and also the discernment that he's given us. And also, I think God was using this covenant, this promise that these two friends had made to each other, that their friendship would come above everything else. They would go, it's the long-term thing. And it helped them in this time. And the people of Israel, if we remember back, they'd asked God for a king. God didn't want them to have a king. He said he was their king. But they had gone on and on. They wanted a king. They wanted to be like the other nations and strong and have a king. So he had given them a king, Saul. But then Saul had, turned away and was using his own strength and ideas and not trusting in God anymore. And in some ways, he still did the same things. He still went into battle against the same enemies. And yet, he didn't trust God anymore. And so, God found David. Now, Jonathan knew what was happening, but he didn't just desert his father. And for many years, he actually stood by his father. And even went into battle later in life where he was killed next to his father. But he didn't fool himself. And he didn't just do what his father asked. And in his own life, he continued seeking God. And he honored his father by living the life that God held for him and seeking God above all else. And in this story, we see quite an unusual trust and love between two friends, two men. And we see how it wasn't just about this friendship. It was a part of a bigger plan. God was using this friendship to sort of unfold his plans. And David and Jonathan made the promise earlier to each other. So that meant that their friendship wouldn't be broken. Whatever difficulties came, they would be able to trust each other. And they would stand by each other. And David was a man after God's own heart that we've heard said. And Jonathan was drawn to this in David and wanted to help him and see no harm come to him. So when they went, and do you remember at the end, they were in a field saying goodbye to each other. And they were really close. And they didn't know if they were going to see each other again. That's pretty hard. Say goodbye. And David, at that point, loved and honored his friend Jonathan by bowing down three times to him with his face in the ground. David was the king chosen by God, and yet he humbled himself before his friend and bowed down. And we often think of David as heroic and inspiring, and we forget that he was also a very humble man at this time anyway. And he knows the danger that Jonathan has put himself in and that he's disobeyed his own father to keep David safe. And I reminded me of Jesus' heart when you see David's heart in that humility. He's a man chosen for God's purpose and he doesn't need to bow down to anyone. And he's king and Jesus is God. And yet through love for us, he does bow down and he does put his face and his life in the dirt for us. And he knows he is chosen and that there is sacrifice and he willingly takes it and humbles himself before us. And we see in David's actions his heart is reflected in how he is. And it's a willing heart and he's ready to serve. And he loves and is able to be loved. And his friendship with Jonathan as a brother, when they departed, Jonathan said, "Go in peace, for we have sworn loyalty to each other in the Lord's name. The Lord is the witness of a bond between us and our children forever." And this wasn't a friendship just for then, but it did go beyond the grave. And you read later how that happened with Jonathan's son being part of David's own family later. And as Jonathan leads us, as God leads us into friendships and relationships, sometimes it's also worth looking. It might just feel great and we might get on with people, but also to wonder if God does have bigger purposes in friendships. He does use us. He does build his church through healthy, good relationships. But I also thought it was interesting. I don't know what you think, but I think some of us within friendships probably find it easier to always be giving and sort of be helping our friends out and stuff like that. And some of us find it easier to receive and kind of want to be, you know, yeah, sort of loved as a friend and things like that. I definitely am a like giver. I'll definitely, yeah, be on it and trying to help my friends. And I find it really weird if somebody wants to help me. And that's not good. Like, I need to work on that. But David, a man after God's own heart, which we keep saying, because it all reflects and reminds us to go back. This is showing us who God is. Shows us that this friendship with Jonathan was a friendship two-way and was forged out of love and seeing God's image in each other. Now, David had a lot going for him. He'd slain a giant when many others hadn't. Apparently, he was very good-looking. He had a wife. He was chosen by God. And yet, in this friendship, they were able to rely on each other, both of them, with each other. And this is what I think a real friendship looks like. And maybe it's worth us just reflecting in our relationships if they're really two-way. And also our relationship with God. Is it two-way? Are we able to receive from him? And are we able to worship and give to him and give our lives to him? And at the Arch, which is a group of friends down the road, women, and we're really trying to work out friendship and life and sharing life together and what that means. And, you know, and sometimes, like every friendships, there are difficult times, but I think we're really learning to talk about those and move on and risk the sort of pain and difficult and awkward conversation because we want to be together. It's worth it to talk it through. And it's amazing we're doing it. You know, we're really going on long term. We want to be long term friends, not just for now. So we have to deal with the difficult stuff and we really meet with God in that because it is hard and it makes us rely on who he is to keep those friendships healthy and real for now, not just relying on what it was last week, but asking God to help us each day in those friendships. And it seems this is God's heart as well. He asks us to be his bride, his church, his family. We're not meant to do it on our own. We have to work at those relationships with each other, that they are two-way. And I wonder what that means for us as a church. You know, we're very good at going out and serving the community and serving the poor. Are we very good at receiving God's love? You know, and I think I've been always blown away by this church, the friendships and how people love and support each other and families. And I reckon God just must love that about this church. I've spoken ahead of my notes. Also, I don't know how different people spend time with God, but sometimes it can be easier to serve him and, you know, join in with projects and different things going on and pray and fast and all of those things, which are ways that we follow and grow and mature and our relationship with God deepens. But what does it mean to receive love in that relationship? I don't know about you. The way I do it is I always spend time in the morning. So I'll read the word and pray and stuff, but always just spend a time just giving nothing. So just sitting and sitting with God and receiving his love and listening to him often saying, I love you and I'm with you. And, you know, that receiving is actually more than anything for me what keeps me going every day and what helps me know that who I am and where I belong. I need his words of love, you know. And I also wondered, we talk about, like, just then, those love and intimacy and relationship with Jesus. And I think for women, that's probably easier. It's a language we use, you know, from when we're small and we like a guy or something like that. It's, you know, even within friendships, we use those words a lot more. And I think it's interesting, this story is about two men and their friendship. And yet there's a language and a intimacy that is really unique within their friendship. And, you know, Jesus is a man and he's asking men and women to love him. And I wonder if this is a helpful relationship to look at as well as between what a man and Jesus, words of love and intimacy and friendship look like. Obviously, I'm not a man, but I just thought I'd throw that one out there. And a love that is held within a vow and a promise. And we think it's all right to know about him, Jesus, and to give him certain parts of our life. But I think what we see in this friendship and through all that Jesus asks of us, actually he wants all of us. He doesn't just want one part. He wants every single bit, even the bit that we want to not give him and that's quite hard and language is quite difficult. Learning to receive for free brings us to asking, can we receive what Jesus Christ has done for us? And by his death, God's covenant and promise has been made true to us. We are no longer separated by God from God. And like the promise that David and Jonathan made to each other, this meant that their friendship could last through all difficulties. So what we read, they were able to go through that because of the promise they'd made, the vow that they'd made that held their friendship. And God makes that covenant, that similar, a similar promise to us through Jesus Christ, through that he died. So we're able to walk through difficulties. We're held within that promise if we want to be. And we see David trust in God and knowing he was part of God's plan, but he didn't know the end. He was held within God's plan. And he was chased and he was persecuted by those who supposedly followed the Lord. And he had extraordinary relationships with people close to him, like Jonathan. He was humble enough to recognize he couldn't do it in his own strength, and he bowed down. And he was not afraid to love his friend, and he was not afraid to ask for help. And through this, we're reminded of the promise of the new covenant through the death of Jesus in Hebrews 10:15-17. And if, like David and Jonathan, that they held this promise, that is what, you know, like monks who vow, you know, to each other or within marriage, you know, those are things that, you know, they help us get through the hard bits. And in Hebrews it says, the Holy Spirit also testifies to us about this. First he says, this is the covenant I will make with them. After that time, says the Lord, I will put my laws in their hearts and I will write them on their minds. Their sins and lawless acts I will remember no more. And that stands for us now, and that invitation to be walking in that, to know that we don't have to know everything that Jesus has written in our hearts and in our minds, his heart, and we can know him through relationship now. And that when we come and we repent and we say sorry through Jesus Christ, he doesn't hold our sin, he lets it go, we're free, we're clean. And as we walk within that promise each day, it helps us to actually come into true relationship with one another as a church and with our neighbours as well and with Jesus Christ himself. That's the end.